Welcome back, listeners, to Built to Lead Season 4, Rebels with a Cause. Today, it is our joy to be joined by Dr. Connie Clerici. She is a system innovator who embodies the principle of novelty in all of her work. Closing the Gap Healthcare was founded as a disruptive force for good in the home care landscape, providing pediatric in-home nursing services for serious condition and terminal patients. Closing the Gap has embraced the cutting edge of how services are provided, expanding into community clinic work, virtual care, social care, and it's all enabled by her organization's core competencies and quality charter that include thought leadership as a fundamental requirement. Her passion extends beyond the world of home care, offering her disruptive perspectives to many organizations and committees that span across all domains of our healthcare system, from digital health to quality to community care to gender diversity and leadership. She also actively gives back to shaping the next generation of leaders in her work as being on the advisory board of the Ivy Business School of Western University and as a senior fellow in the Dalhousie Lana School of Public Health at the University of Toronto. Her pragmatic approaches to how we can deliver home care in Canada and abroad earned her the Queen Elizabeth II Diamond Jubilee Medal in 2012. This is in addition to dozens of other accolades, including Canada's Most Powerful Woman, RBC Entrepreneur of the Year, and the Top 25 Women of Influence. Connie, we are so honored to have you join us and be a part of Built to Lead. And we are so excited to get this podcast started. Welcome.
Thank you.
The first question I wanted to ask to get this started is, in your opinion, what makes a good rebel?
Well, rebel has negative connotations in our society, and I actually don't see it that way, which I think is in part what we're going to talk about today. A great rebel, in my mind, has to be a great person. And so leadership character is paramount. Being a values-based leader and having the courage to stick to your values, knowing that you have to be consultative because you can't know everything about everything, open to constructive criticism, and sometimes criticism that's not constructive. You must be able to take it in stride and improve where you can. Being goal-focused, always having a goal. There's no sense of being a rebel if you don't have a cause or a goal at the end of the day. And I think of the song, Rebel Without a Cause. And someone who values diversity, not because they're mandated to, but it comes from the core of your very, very being. In believing in equity from all angles, I think those are great traits of a rebel who would succeed.
No, I think that's great, Connie. I really like how you talked about rebel with a goal, because I think if we look at a rebel without a goal, that's problematic. And just talking about the value-based, I think that's something that you've talked about in the past for sure, something that you stick to, that integrity. So that has led to the success that you've reached. So we definitely are happy to have you on the podcast because we see you as one of those good rebels in the healthcare system. And that really brings us to our topic today, which is novelty. And novelty is something that motivates us and excites us inherently. Study shows that a novel thinking keeps us engaged, drives satisfaction, and keeps us sharp to find new and better ways of doing things. Connie, you brought and you continue to bring novelty to our health system. And it's largely from the work you have done and the infrastructure you've built for others to work in founding Closing the Gap. We want to spend some time talking about that journey and the novel thinking that brought it about. But first, we know that novelty has to spring forward against the status quo that can sometimes lull us into comfort to our own detriment. Can you maybe set the stage for us? What was it like 30 years ago in the healthcare space? What was it about the status quo that wasn't working for you? I know you started as a healthcare aide and you went into the critical care nurse, then to the community before opening up, Closing the Gap. So what was it that sparked the idea for Closing the Gap? How was the status quo?
So the status quo in the healthcare system 30 years ago It's interesting because I started my career as a nurse, but prior to that as a healthcare aide to earn some money to fund my education, and then hoping to be a family physician. I quickly shifted after having my first child to going back to school to become a critical care nurse. What I learned in working in acute care, there are big differences between a teaching hospital and a non-teaching hospital. I worked in a teaching hospital in Alberta in pediatrics in the NICU and moved to Ontario and became an adult critical care nurse. The thing I found interesting was the governance model in the hospital, and it was the same and similar to what was in long-term care. And that was the structure. And it had direct care providers being the lowest on the totem pole. And so being the lowest on the totem pole meant that you didn't have access to what folks at the top of the totem pole had. And you often felt oppressed. I know for sure that in my role in critical care, people who are really excited and want to change things, 30 years ago, it wasn't a great character trait, or it wasn't considered to be a great character trait. And, you know, I recall an incident in the ICU where I had worked so hard to help save the life of someone who was really in a serious state. And the physician that I worked with, we both worked so hard that night to deal with the cardiac patients that were there, as well as this really critical patient. And the next day, my manager pulled me aside and said to me, "Connie, I want you to know you got a compliment. But you didn't get a compliment because you're smart. You got a compliment because you're cutesy." That devastated me, totally devastated me. I thought to myself, I looked around and I thought, how many people actually like what they're doing and can accept that kind of feedback? Because I really valued education and my intelligence. That sparked me to leave the sector and move out into the community and search around to see what kind of a difference I could make and could I have some more autonomy of thought. And so I tried a few positions, but really I was able to assist in closing a children's institution where there were allegations that were in the newspapers. I won't go into it all, but this was with a population of children who were compromised and their families were very, very vulnerable. And when I went in and saw how these children were being treated, it was a defining moment in my life. Because I thought those children need a voice. Those families need a voice. Somebody needs to advocate for better care and better standards for serving children who are vulnerable. And so in that position, I got to do everything from policies and procedures to getting involved in politics because nobody wanted these children in their backyard, to designing the model of care and so on. And really implementing what the community living movement was all about, and that's normalization. So that's something that isn't taught in nursing school, and I embraced it. And it was a wonderful, wonderful opportunity, almost like opening an organization without the financial risk. And so during that time, I purchased nursing services out in the community. I was let down by a number of organizations, but I was also deeply concerned about quality. And so after I made sure those children were safe, which I promised I would, I stayed on call for 3 years, didn't take a vacation. I decided it was time to move on and approached my husband to see if he would support me to open an organization. And he did. I'm very grateful to this day for that support and him agreeing to take on that level of financial risk, because we were just a young family with a big mortgage and two young children. And so the organization came to be. Having said that, managing a government budget is completely different than putting your house on the line and having to speak the financial language of accountants and so on. So I quickly learned I had to go back to school. I was naive. I was a woman with a passion to help this population, but naive as to what it took. So I went back to school. One, I needed to speak the language of the bank. And so I always saw myself as a person who could fix things, that no problem is so large that we can't chip away and try to find a solution. So with the opening of the organization, really the novelty that we introduced, and maybe we'll talk a little bit more about that later, were things that typically weren't happening in the sector. And so I believed I could set up a culture where patients had control and staff enjoyed the autonomy that they had in their clinical practice. So I really wanted to simplify things for families, and giving people control over their own destiny or their child's destiny it simplifies things so much, because decisions are made out of love and passion for the success of their child. So, you know, as I said previously, what makes a great rebel? It's almost repeating what I thought about when I opened the organization, is making sure that we had diversity in our organization. And diversity meaning that anybody who had the qualifications could provide the work, but also diversity in skill set. So as we grew, the organization needed to have a receptionist, schedulers, all those things at first I did myself. And when I say values-based, I'm very, very passionate about being values-based. I have zero tolerance for anybody who would walk into our office and not say hello to that receptionist, and or somebody that would just say hello to me and not say hello to the scheduler. So making sure that we have a culture where everybody feels valued, regardless of whether or not you had the opportunity to go to university or college, we should be treating people with equity. And this was long, you know, this is, you know, almost 34 years ago is how the culture of closing the gap evolved.
Well, Connie, first, I just want to commend you on the courage that it takes to even start a company like this in a time where it might have felt uncomfortable. So just taking that risk alone, that's something that not a lot of people are willing to do. Even just thinking personally to myself, sometimes when you have ideas you want to execute, like you see these changes in the healthcare system, but sometimes we're afraid to make these changes because we don't feel like, okay, maybe I don't have the skill set to do this. Can I do this or not? But for you to go against the status quo, I think that's just amazing. It is definitely inspirational.
Yeah. I think the one thing that really stands out for me, Connie, is the importance of environment, the importance of conditioning and conditions. I think it was the condition that you were put in your career earlier on, where you got feedback that perhaps wasn't feedback that you would hoped or would have hoped that would help you grow and be better in your practice. But it was one that triggered a passion. That was one that triggered, you know, maybe I need to create the conditions where I will thrive, but I will also allow others to thrive. And then you went about creating that condition, not only for yourself, but others. Kind of moving the journey forward, Connie, I think the one of the first major contracts that was signed with Closing the Gaps was SickKids. And this is such an impressive first client to land. So the question for you is, how did you get them on your side? What did you learn that you had to do or say to be able to bring people on the side of being able to think novel, think new, think innovation, think different, and push that dial forward?
Yeah, Sick Kids was very interesting for me. So first off, the group that I was working with knew me from my previous role. And so we had a bit of a foundation there towards building a trust relationship. However, many people that I worked with closing that institution, as soon as I opened what they deemed to be a private enterprise, I became a bit of a villain in the space and given labels that weren't accurate. So I did have a bit of a relationship with Sick Kids. One thing that I found about Sick Kids way back when and still to this day was they have just nice people working there. They and the discharge planners that I was working with, we shared a common set of values that everything we did had to work for the children and their families. And just the personalities of those folks just inspired me to want to be the best that I could possibly be. Also, you know, being a rebel in the space meant that you had to redefine some of those trust relationships. Some people in society give young folks, I was only 30 at the time, give young folks the opportunity to prove themselves, and others shut the door right away. Sick Kids gave me the opportunity to prove myself. That's something that I'll never, ever forget. And I was so surprised, you know, marrying that my perception of them being so nice and giving me an opportunity to prove myself just made the relationship so collaborative. We went on to co-author a book together on how to care for the populations we're talking about out in the community. So a handbook that actually was purchased all around the world that gave into policies and procedures, family-centered care, and things that parents were really quite concerned about. So we tried to address that need right off the bat. I have to say, when I got my first referral, I can still remember that. I won't share her last name, but her first name was Mark. She pulled me aside and she said, "Okay, kiddo, I'm going to give you one chance. You're either going to do a great job and we'll work together again, or you're going to do a terrible job and we will never work together again." I was terrified, but I valued that perspective from Sick Kids because they were the leading pediatric organization in the province and have gone on in the world for it. So I valued that perspective and I still have pictures of the child, and that child received probably more than the Cadillac of services. I know that's a term, but if I had to say, it was probably more like a Porsche, or in today's world, a Tesla of services. And it was so, so rewarding to be able to work with the family and then to stay on and work with them through their grief.
What a great story. I think that was it's so different to be able to work for an organization that you truly not only support because of the idea and the motives that it has, but because of the people that are working behind it, that are, you know, functioning that front end and showing off, you know, the kindness and the value-driven care that you were also looking for as you started your career. Now, of course, closing the gap didn't just stop at pediatric health, right? So it has evolved subsequently, continuing to, as the name would suggest, closing gaps in home care as well as community care. And, you know, there are so many gaps in the healthcare system. Connie, how do you go about identifying and prioritizing which ones need that novel thinking and how we can come up with ideas that can ultimately help close them?
Sure. So let me just share a quick story about Closing the Gap. That wasn't the original name of the organization, and we decided to go through a rebranding exercise. And the name Closing the Gap came from one of our directors in Toronto who found the term on the World Health Organization. It fit who we were as an organization and from our perspective, helped us to further define our value proposition in the sector. That wasn't the belief of some folks. And I remember one call in particular after we rebranded the organization. I received a call from one of our referral sources that said, "Why are you calling yourself Closing the Gap? What are you trying to say about us?" And my response was, "We're not talking about you. We're not talking about funders. We're talking about what is our mandate? What's our mission? What do we want to accomplish? This has nothing to do with the entire sector and our funding sources. This is our relationship with our population that we serve. This is our relationship with our staff." So just to share with you, Closing the Gap maybe was a bit ahead of our time with that name. And now it's a more accepted name, but we did have challenges when we first used it. Yes, Closing the Gap has had to evolve over time. And it was quite a sad acknowledgement that I had to make, because I really wanted to be the number one pediatric organization out there providing services. But as I did my advocacy efforts to try and help families gain access and to better funding and more control, I was met with words such as "children will never make it to the top of the priority list simply because they don't vote." And when funding's handed out, oftentimes there's political pressures towards that funding. Things have changed since back then, but also in my naivety, I thought we could have an organization that could sustain itself just on the pediatric population. What I learned in becoming ISO registered and accredited was, we can say as much as we want how great we are, but unless we have evidence to prove that, it's just anecdotal. And so we had to embark on a journey where we were providing evidence. And in order to fund the positions to be able to gather that evidence and the software required and all of those kinds of things, we had to grow. And the place we could grow was to diversify and provide services from childhood until death do us part. And that was a big leap for us. And it has made it so that we have access to the appropriate internal infrastructure that is required to guarantee quality. When we were just a smaller organization, I honestly thought we were the absolute best. We were the best in my opinion. But then I learned as we grew, we didn't know what we didn't know. And thank heavens we diversified so that we could have access to more intelligence, more knowledge, and all of the things that go along with building a structured organization.
Yeah, I love how you talk about that diversity piece, because you're first talking about diversity in terms of skill set that's needed within, and then that's internally, and then externally looking at, okay, diversity in terms of the services that we can provide. And now in the day-to-day operations, the innovative work done at Closing the Gap, you're continuing to look to drive change. And thought leadership is embraced as one of the core competencies at Closing the Gap. And I know you talked about before, success is a result of we, so it's not a result of I. So building that strong team has led to that. So how do we encourage thought leadership in the workplace or even outside of it?
Yeah, and so I would encourage people first to think about thought leadership as a really strong character trait. Because you need great character traits to run an organization. You need great character traits to be a mom. And now I'm learning I need character traits to be a noni as well. So you can't turn it on and off if it's authentic. It's who you are. And it's what you strive to accomplish as a human being. And so, yes, thought leadership is very important, but those leadership character traits have to be able to go right across your core being. And for some people, it's natural. And for some people, they have to work on it to be able to find that natural feeling. When I was at Ivy and I had an article written, one of the associate deans at the time said in the article that every time there was a business question asked, I would go to a place of my values and answer the question, where some other folks in other industries would always go to the business case. And he said in the article that he thought I was incredibly naive, but as he got to know me, he realized that my values were more important to me than anything else in the organization and the values of the organization, because my values have to be the values of the organization. And with that comes thought leadership. So supporting your team to be folks that inspire others to be successful, not compete with one another, but to inspire their colleagues to be successful. Being open to the innovations that people on your team bring forward. I think I mentioned earlier on, or if I didn't, I apologize, but you have to be wise enough to know that you don't know everything about everything. And so giving your clinicians the autonomy to bring forward innovations and leadership and support them to evaluate, is this going to improve care for the people that rely on us? Or is this going to improve how we support our staff? I think thought leadership is a really big part of that. And some examples that I thought that I would just share. And one is giving clinicians, because you know we're a remote workforce, giving clinicians time together. So one-on-one clinician conversations and giving clinicians access to someone who has developed best practices within a specific area. Also need to give people personal development time. And I don't say it's not just professional development. It covers everyone's happiness, both as a worker in the organization, but a worker in life. We know happy people provide the best possible care. One of the things that differentiated Closing the Gap was our investment in ethics. And this was probably about 15 years ago. We embedded ethics into all performance appraisals, all decision-making, and we viewed everything that we did through the lens of having good ethics. It was really great, and we were highlighted as a best practice organization for that. And then the 360 feedback loop. Sometimes we're not as self-aware as we think we are. And to be a great thought leader, you need to be self-aware. So we invested quite heavily into providing people with feedback from both internal and external sources. We also encourage mentoring, both from within the organization, but introducing colleagues to other mentors outside of the organization. You'd be quite shocked at my group of mentors. Some of them I've had since I opened the organizations. Others have come on over time. And some of them have absolutely nothing to do with healthcare. They're providing me mentorship on how to be a great person, but how to make an organization sustainable and things that we often don't think about on a day-to-day basis. And finally, I think great thought leaders understand that you must, as a leader and as a professional, you must go to school on an ongoing basis. You cannot stagnate, because then you're not being your best self. For me, I go to school every single year, never missed a year, and in various programs. And I think, to be able to say we're thought leaders, we must be educated and up to date.
There was so much gold in what you just shared, Connie. One in particular that very much stands out to me is, accepting that you don't know everything, right? And when you don't know everything, putting your ego aside and having the feature that you shared earlier on, which is consultation, right? So going out to those who you work with in the field, consulting with them and asking good quality questions to be able to then take those pieces of information and then take it to the decision-making table. That is, it's so important. And I feel like sometimes it's so missed because we have biases that we just carry forward, right? And our judgments tend to be fogged and we tend to then make the difficult decision, but it's sometimes also the wrong decision because we didn't have the person in the field in our mind. And that's so important. And then your last point about keeping in time with the trends in the industry, right? It's because you did something 10 years ago does not mean that that's going to be the same way of doing 10 years later. And so that constant need to upgrade yourself like you would like a software, right? Upgrading yourself, maintaining yourself as a car gets oil changes, making sure that you are constantly maintained and upgraded is very important as time goes on, especially at the time of technology in the digital age, where that becomes such a key component. Outside of closing the gap, your list of involvements is very expansive and diverse, and it's inspirational, to be honest. And there's many listeners that we have that might be looking into getting involved in new opportunities. So the question for you was, you know, how do you decide what to get involved with and what not to get involved with? If you are new to healthcare and maybe kind of don't have a network or know how to get involved in novel work, what would be the first place to start? And, you know, does this have to do with your day-to-day life? Does it have to do with your interests and passions? Or what are some pieces of advice that you can offer to our listeners who are thinking about getting involved in novel ways and in novel thinking?
Great. And so, you know, from my perspective, you get involved with organizations, whether it's charities, whether it's universities, colleges, whatever, on a volunteer basis. And for me, I view it as an opportunity to learn without having to pay. So I've sat on countless charities, and when I feel like I've given my all and I have nothing left to share that's innovative, that's when we part ways. But I also learned about myself is that what I learned about myself is that you can get really comfortable in those opportunities and only keep going to the same kinds of opportunities. And I had one experience where I was offered by the federal health minister to go to a retreat pre-budget. And I was looking at the other folks that were invited to this retreat. And I felt like it was, I was on an episode of Sesame Street and Which One Doesn't Belong, because they were all Fortune 500 people. That was not me. I have to say, it was one time that my husband pushed me. He pushed me to get outside of my comfort zone. And it was such a learning experience for me to go sit behind closed doors and find out how things actually work. It was so cool because I then went back with a new level of curiosity and said, I want to learn this now. I want to be involved in this. I want to meet with people that aren't just in my nice little circle within healthcare. And so I started to step outside my comfort zone and attend events where I could just walk up to people and say, hey, I'm Connie. And, you know, I really am an introvert. No, not many people will believe that, but I am an introvert. And it takes a lot of energy to mentally prepare myself for those kinds of events. But as I started to do that and bring on mentors into my circle that were outside of healthcare, it was so inspirational. I was astounded at how much people valued me for being in healthcare, and because it was something they didn't know anything about. So our relationships were always mutually beneficial. I think, you know, volunteering at universities, my goodness, you get to meet wonderful people. And you know, U of T in particular has wonderful mentoring opportunities. And so I get to meet students and they keep me abreast of change. but I get, am able to give them some wisdom and guidance. It's like I said, it has to be mutually beneficial. Never sit on a group or a board or anything because you think it's prestigious. Sit on it because you think you have something to give and something to learn. I think it's very important in every part of your life is to give people the compliments they deserve. All too often, we find that we're in a situation where somebody has done something absolutely fabulous, and the idea is taken by someone else and renamed, instead of giving the acknowledgement to the individual that went out on a limb to introduce this novel idea. A piece of advice from me is to stay away from back office chatter and gossip, because it'll suck the life out of you. And those things keep you awake at night, worrying about something you can't control and worrying about something that you have no idea whether or not it's true. So I have very little tolerance for supporting back office chatter. And in my career, I have found when you do that, you run the risk of making an enormous mistake, because it could just be someone's perception that isn't in line with reality. I found when I look for mentors, you can see I have a theme of mentorship. When I look for mentors, I could be anywhere at any time. So I was at an Ivy event, just to give you an example. And I saw somebody speak, and then I listened to the Q&As, and I went, oh my goodness, I need you in my life. I need you to teach me what you know. So I stalked him. And he still finds it quite humorous today that I went right up to him and asked him to be my mentor and didn't give him a chance to say no. I gave him all the reasons why he was going to be my mentor and how he could contribute to both closing the gap and to myself. So don't be afraid to stalk somebody. I also think that being a novel organization gives you the opportunity, when you're tired of something, you can create something new. And, or you can look for a new problem to solve. Like I said, I'm a fixer. I want to solve problems for people in a sustainable manner, and so that we can make life in this world a better place. And one example of that that I'm very proud of, but I still don't have the funding for it, is helping vulnerable people deal with social isolation and loneliness, but deal with it in a meaningful way. And through some of our projects, we've been able to prevent suicide, address food insecurity, help people build relationships with their family members, and, you know, stop going to the emergency department. These are all wonderful things that enhance somebody's quality of life, but getting buy-in to what people think as soft services is incredibly difficult. I've been on this mission for 8 years now. I'm not done yet. Somebody somewhere will believe that we have to help the vulnerable population in different ways. Like I said from the very beginning, we all have to, if we want to be rebels, we all have to have a cause that we want to support and a big vision to get there, and to surround ourselves with the people that believe in that vision and share this common set of values. And we can accomplish so much as citizens if in fact we help each other out.
Yep. And the word that's sticking out to me is boldness. So just boldness in terms of trying to tackle those wicked problems, Connie, that you're looking towards. Boldness to go up to that gentleman to just say, oh, can you be my mentor? Boldness to continue to have that respect and knowing in terms of, let's say, the gossiping, controlling the controllables. And then how do we learn how to be comfortable in the uncomfortable, or be comfortable with the uncomfortable? So that is a running theme that a lot of the leaders that we've spoken to have talking about a lot and taking those risks. So I know even for yourself, you mentioned before learning how to ski was a risk for you. So even those personal goals of you setting it, as we talked about, rebels with a goal, rebels with a cause.
Thank you, Connie, for giving us such insightful historical reference to healthcare 30 years ago. And thank you for sharing some of your skills for fostering novel thinking and ideas. Sadly, this is where we have to take a break for part two. In part two, Matthew and I will continue our discussion with Connie by exploring two articles on tools to analyze and manage novel thinking and innovations in health services. Join us as Connie shares some of the tools she uses with her colleagues.
Thank you for listening today, and thank you for joining us on Built to Lead Season 4, Rebels with a Cause. Built to Lead is created and hosted by Matthew Goldburn
and co-hosted by Mubin Lalani.
Built to Lead is a companion podcast to the Vernissage Health Dialogue Series at the Institute of Health Policy, Management, and Evaluation at the University of Toronto.
Tell us what you thought about this week's episode. You can find us on LinkedIn at Vernissage Health and on Instagram at Vernissage Health. You'll find both of these in the episode description. Today's episode was produced by
Dheeraj Thakur,
Matthew Goldburn, with music composed by Sindhu.
A special thanks to Wendy Nelson, Senior Fellow at the Institute of Health Policy, Management, and Evaluation. Until next time.